When you come to Carrabba's Italian Grill on a Monday, you're going to say,
wow, a three-course meal for only $12.99?
On Amore Monday, get Carrabba's delicious made-from-scratch entrees, including super salad and your choice of an appetizer or dessert.
That's a huge meal for only $12.99. Wow.
Choose Carrabba's homemade lasagna, prosciutto-wrapped pork tenderloin, or linguine positano with chicken, plus two other courses.
Wow, now I love Mondays.
Come to Carrabba's this Amore Monday for a delicious three-course meal starting at only $12.99.
Wow.
Introducing the all-new 2018 Subaru Crosstrek at 2.9% financing on a Crosstrek today. Learn more at SubaruofKennesaw.com. Cannot be combined with any other incentive. Financing to well-qualified applicants. Subject to credit approval, vehicle insurance approval, and vehicle availability. No down payment required. See participating retailers for details. Offer expires 11/30/17.
From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgate. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders, we are the Forum for the Fan, the Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, another edition of the Stakeholder Spotlight. We got Chandler Knight, Chandler7 on Twitter. Sir, how's everything?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Man, the floor is yours. We're going to talk sports, of course, and whatever's on your mind. Definitely want to let everybody know if more in-depth talks with your podcast, Gear Drift, series you got going on with your podcast. I would love to hear more because I actually listened to a couple of episodes. But, man, the floor is yours on the Stakeholder Spotlight. Sir, fire away. Tell everybody who you are. Some people may know who you are depending on what episodes they listen to or may not listen to. But tell them all how you could be contacted, your social media accounts, and then let's get the ball rolling on your spotlight.
All right. Well, my name's Chandler Knight, Knight Chandler 7 on Twitter. I'm a Navy veteran from Brooklyn, New York. Diehard Knicks fan, Yankee fan, Ranger fan. You know, one of my passions, I guess, right now is talking about veterans issues. So I do a podcast called Gear Adrift. It's on the Out of Pocket Sports Network. And basically what I do with the podcast is just try to disseminate information for veterans, about veterans, not just for veterans, but also for their families, friends, people who know veterans or working with them. Because one of the things that I have found going through the things that I've gone through coming back home, for a lot of veterans, it's very difficult for us to assimilate back into civilian society. I personally still really have never assimilated back. I still don't feel like I'm part of society. I still miss being in, and there's a disconnect for us. So what happens is some of us get lost we get lost in the world because we don't fit. We're no longer in the service, so we don't have that connection, and we're not part of civilian society, so we don't have that connection. So we kind of drift, and a lot of us get lost. We wind up in, you know, substance abuse, mental health issues, PTSD issues, homelessness. So what I'm trying to do with the podcast is talk about the things I've been through, the things that helped me, and information that can help somebody else, be it how to get your service-connected pension, how to get your benefits, you know, to go to a VA hospital, if nothing else, and get that VA ID card and get your medical issues taken care of, because these are things that we have earned. They're not things that you're asking somebody. It's not a handout. These are things that veterans have earned. To talk about things that veterans that are struggling can do, I'm in Rochester, New York right now, so there's places here that do things. There's a place called Rock Covery. I just found out about where there's a place where you can go and do physical activities because that's something that helps. And not just veterans, people with depression, period, but especially veterans. You can go and be around other veterans. They do hiking, camping, fishing, all of these things. Now, I've never fished in my life. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I don't know about fishing, but that's something that is a possibility that I could try just to get me out of sometimes a bad day. And that's what I try to disseminate to other veterans is just the ways to get through to the next day, because 22 veterans kill themselves every day. 22 veterans every day in this country commit suicide. What I would like to hope to do is just to reach one and convince them that tomorrow's worth getting to. And if I can convince one person that tomorrow's worth getting to, then I've done what I'm supposed to do on this planet. That's the way I look at it. I think that's my goal, is to just to try to help one person. I'd love to help more than one person, but if I can help one person, then I've done what I'm supposed to do, which is to make the world a better place than it was when I came here. So that's what the podcast is about. You know, it's going to be serious stuff sometimes, but sometimes it's going to be nutty stuff. It's going to be things talking about what sports has done for me, how sports can help veterans. And it's also for family members and friends, so that if you don't know how to talk to a veteran, those of us that suffer from PTSD, there are times that we can't express to our friends and family, our significant others, what we're going through, how we feel, the darkness that comes upon us, and they don't know how to talk to us. So I try to give them some road signs, as it were, to kind of connect with their family member, their loved one. Sometimes it's just a simple matter of sitting there and letting them talk, no matter what craziness comes out of their head, no matter what they say, just let them say it. You know, just let them say it, let them get it off their chest, and they say, okay, let's go for a walk. You know, to listen without judgment is the greatest thing you can do for somebody that's struggling, especially a veteran, because a lot of vets have seen some truly awful things. And to try to reconcile that is difficult. So sometimes we just need to be able to talk and have somebody listen without judgment, without trying to fix it. We're not asking you to do anything other than listen. And when it happens, that allows the family members to kind of see where their loved one is, and to just be there for them. And it helps build a bond, you know, and it gives the veteran the ability to build some trust and know that they can say some of these things that are in their head that might seem like, oh, my God, I can't say that. That's terrible. Yeah, you can. You can say it. You know, you can say it to your loved ones because they're not going to judge you, and that helps. So that's really what I'm trying to do with the podcast. It's called Gear Adrift. I've done two episodes. I got to do another episode this week. I've been slacking a little bit because I haven't been in the greatest of states personally. It's just been a little crazy for me. But that's what I'm doing with the podcast. And like I said, hopefully if nothing else, I can just, you know, give some good information and help somebody along in their journey. And it's also, you know, for me, it helps me because it helps me along in my journey, because if I'm going to tell somebody to try this and try that, that means I have to do it myself. So it creates accountability for me, and it keeps me from being a liar and a hypocrite. Because if I say to another veteran, you need to try this, I have to try it too. So for me, it's a kind of a two-way street. It helps me, and then hopefully I get to help somebody else. So that's with the podcast.
Yeah, I checked out both your episodes, and I was very intrigued to listen to something I'm not very familiar with. You hear from pretty much the outside looking in, if you're a civilian that hasn't served in active duty, you haven't served in the military, you hear some of the things that goes on with our brothers and sisters who served in certain branches, with the Navy, the Marines, the Army, whatever. I was listening to that episode where you were talking about, it was your second episode, about 22 veterans do kill each other every day. They kill each commit suicide every day. And you said specifically to get up and do something. So I guess my question, because I wanted to ask you, because I don't know, and I wanted to get your point of view. What you mentioned, that don't stay stagnant. What is it, do you think or believe, because you've seen it, you've been through that in that position, what makes them stagnant? What makes them feel like they're hopeless? Is there a way you can explain that? I wanted to get more in depth on that after hearing what you said on your podcast.
Yeah. What happens is the disconnect. I used to be somebody. You know, I used to be somebody. I used to matter. Because I was part of something that was bigger than me, that was greater than me. I was with people who thought like I did, who believed that It was about we, not me, who I've had people save my life, who personally couldn't stand me. I've saved people's lives who personally I couldn't stand. But it wasn't about that. It was about we have to get this done, and none of us are leaving here without the other. And then when you come home, you don't have that. So you feel lost. You feel lost and you feel useless. So you begin to feel hopeless. And if you don't have family, I don't have family. A lot of us that come back don't have family. We don't have those connections anymore. So it you kind of circle a drain where you want to go out and do something, but you don't know where to go. You don't know anybody. You don't have any real friends anymore because the people that you grew up with, they're very different now. They didn't join. So, you know, they're doing their thing as civilians, and they have their kids and their wives, and they have this normal life that you can't relate to, and they can't relate to you. So you begin to just get stuck in this circle of, I need someone, but I don't know how to ask for help. And then the pride kicks in. I shouldn't have to ask for help. I did this, and I did this in the service, and I was self-sufficient, and I was able to do all these things. I shouldn't have to ask help. I should be able to get out of it on my own. And you look up, and it's a year, 2 years after you got out, and you haven't gone forward in your life. You haven't moved one inch. And you begin to look, and you don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. And you start saying to yourself, well, if I don't matter anymore, why am I here? And once that question comes in, you know, I have multiple suicide attempts. I've been revived 3 times because I got to a point where my life did not matter to me. As I've gone through the therapies and other things, what I found is sometimes the simple act of getting up and moving has helped, because the physical activity, just the ability, the simple act of movement can help. So just getting up, go to another room, go walk to the store, go interact with somebody, go do some volunteer work, do something is the biggest thing, because when you get stuck in that cycle of I'm alone, I feel lonely, no one wants me, no one cares, it's very easy then to go to the next step and say, well, no one's going to miss me. Why should I bother staying here? So what I talk about is just do something. Get up and do something. What I do sometimes when I get there, I get up and I just walk outside. And the simple act of going outside and breathing fresh air changes my mind state. It'll change my mindset, and I'll be like, okay, whew, okay, and take a deep breath. I say, all right, what's really going on? What's really wrong with me right now? And then I can pick up a phone and call somebody and say, hey, I'm having a bad day. You know, but the ability to get to recognize that you're struggling and then getting up and doing something is so important, because once you move, you know, it's physics, you know. A body in motion will continue to stay in motion. A body at rest will continue to stay at rest. So what you want to do is get some motion going. And once the motion gets going, you keep going.
That's very interesting, man. I guess this is what I really don't understand. And I hope a veteran like yourself can help me paint a picture. So when a veteran who comes from back to the States as a civilian, and there's struggle, I mean, you provided outreach on your podcast to get the help, but I'm still surprised at this point where that should be, I would say automatic, but that should be almost damn near a layup, a guarantee that when a veteran who served in the military comes home, benefits should be already on the table. The help should already be there, wherever part of the country you happen to live. You shouldn't have to go out of your way and fight to just to get to what you've already earned. That it's still mind-boggling to me when it comes to that. And you mentioned some of these sites. I think it was on your first episode, the first episode you did. Certain places you could go get your where you could file your claims. Is there any success for filing those claims overall? Is there statistics on that as far as where veterans have been successful getting what they needed?
70% of veterans get denied the first time they file a claim. There's a decided lack of services. The VA administration is a civilian entity. It is not part of the military. There's multiple cases been in the news over the years where there are VA hospitals who literally will throw patients waiting lists in the trash. There are veterans who will die waiting for services. There are still Vietnam veterans who are still waiting for their claim to be approved, and they're dying from Agent Orange. Those are facts. The VA, the government just slashed $470 million from a program called HUD-VASH, which was a program specifically for veterans, homeless veterans, and what it was is it would get you housing. It would get you in some low-income housing, but it would get you housing. And, you know, they would pay the majority of it. It's kind of like Section 8, but specifically for veterans. They just cut that program. So it's very difficult for veterans to get assistance when they come back. So what you wind up having to do is you fight, and a lot of veterans give up. There's a young lady on Twitter who was assaulted while she was in the service. And for 5 years, she has been trying to get the VA to approve her claim. Now, what the VA will do is they will give you therapy. They'll give you medications. They will do everything to take care of you, but they will then deny your claim. How does that work? So you then feel like they're calling you a liar. And that's what happens. And then the veterans, at that point, they give up. And what happens then? Now you wind up homeless. You wind up on drugs. You wind up, you know, angry, going out there hurting somebody because you're lost. It is very difficult for veterans to get help when you come back. The system is not designed to give you any help. If you're 100% service-connected veteran, which means that you can't work, you can still be denied with Social Security disability, which makes no sense. Because if I'm 100% disabled, how am I not qualified for Social Security disability? But that can happen. The system is designed to delay. And eventually the hope is that you either give up or you drop dead. I have some health issues personally that I've had a VA doctor tell me, I need both of my knees and both of my hips replaced. The doctor told me they're not going to do it for me because they would rather wait for another 20 years so that by the time they would do it because of my age, there'll be so many other things wrong with me that I'll probably kill myself. This was told to me by a VA doctor. I'm not alone in hearing this. This is the system that veterans come home to. This is why you see so many angry veterans walking around and you hear them going to the hospitals and so on and so forth. But the system that is set up right now is not a good system. Now, there are good VA hospitals, but unfortunately for a lot of veterans, we don't have the resources to get to them. I mean, I lived in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, in a city called Iron Mountain, way out in the middle of nowhere. One of the best VA hospitals I've ever been to in my life. One of the best. I showed up there a couple of Octobers ago. A week later, I showed up there, and I drove up there. It wasn't like I was homeless, but it was because I just got there. I hadn't found a place to live. A week after I got there, they had me in an apartment. Okay? I'm from Brooklyn, New York. You go to the New York VA, and you say to them, I'm homeless, I have nowhere to go, you'd be lucky to have a place in a year. That's the difference in the quality of care. So it's The quality of care is not consistent. The quality of the people you work with is not consistent. And you add all that up and you take a veteran who's dealing with physical health issues, mental health issues, and sometimes substance abuse issues, that right there is designed to let that veteran fail and more often than not wind up in jail or dead.
Man. Now, how long have you served in the Navy?
I did 16 years in the Navy, and then I did 3 years in the Army.
Okay. What did you love about the Navy and the Army, and what about where you've been all around the world? You have a place that you preferred, a culture that you liked, any experiences that you want to share as far as abroad or?
Well, I went to the Navy when I was 17. At the time I went to the Navy, I was on the street as a kid, and a lot of people kept telling me I need to do something with my life. I went down and tried to join the Marines. Marine recruiter wasn't there. The Navy recruiter was. He started talking to me about airplanes and this and that. Now, again, I'm from Brooklyn. I know nothing about the Navy except that they got submarines. I didn't believe the recruiter when he told me that they had aircraft. I'm like, yeah, you're flying off the end of the boat, right? He's like, yeah, we do that. I'm like, nah, you don't do that. I tell you what, you put that in writing, I'll sign right now. This is how I wound up in the Navy. I kid you not. Because I didn't believe the recruiter, which was the best move I ever made. I got structure. My company commander, C.C. Farget, was the first male ever in my life to tell me he was proud of me. It's the first time I ever heard those words, I'm proud of you, was from a white guy from Mississippi. Okay? The first time I ever heard those words. And it made me feel good, and it made me feel like I was worth something. The Navy saved my life. I got a degree in engineering out of it. I got self-confidence. I got friends for life. I got the ability. I learned things. I saw the Pope in St. Peter's Square on Easter Sunday. Okay, I've met 5 presidents. I've been to 4 embassy dinners. I've met 3 foreign heads of state. I've been literally around the world. You know, that's what the Navy did for me. The Army, when I went to the Army, I was overseas and I was in combat. And what you do in combat is what you do in combat. You do what you have to do. But the biggest thing that the military did for me was it gave me a work ethic, and it showed me that what integrity was. It showed me what integrity was, which is I don't have to lie to people. I don't have to steal from you, that I'm good enough that I can earn whatever it is I have to earn, and no matter what obstacle you put in front of me, I can overcome it. That's what it did for me, and that's why I loved it. It made me believe that I could do anything. It made me believe, and also showed me that it doesn't matter what you look like, it doesn't matter what your gender is, it doesn't matter what deity you worship, we're all the same. You know, there's a-holes in every walk of life, and there's good people in every walk of life. And I judge people based on how they conduct themselves. I don't judge them based on what they look like and all those other things. So it opened my mind and broadened my horizons to a point where, you know, I'm a human being. I'm part of the human race. I can see further than the end of my block. The military, for me, did a lot of things, a lot of very positive things. And yeah, there's negative things that go along with it and all of that, but I wouldn't trade one day, one moment of what I experienced in the service. I wouldn't trade it, because without it, I wouldn't be the person I am, and I wouldn't be where I am. So,
what message would you like to send to like a guy or a girl, man or woman, regardless of background, in the inner city, any borough, Brooklyn, if you want to pick that borough, about their interested in joining the military, any advice you would give them as far as choosing that option into the military, whatever branch it may be. What advice would you give to that guy or that was your age? Now that, you know, around in 2017 going on 18, what would you tell them as far as advice if they're interested in joining the military or one of the branches?
I would say if you really, truly want to see past the end of your block, then join the service. If you're not sure if it's for you, join the reserves first, because you get an idea what military life is like. You get an idea of how life is going to be, which sometimes you're going to work for people who are idiots. You are sometimes going to work for people who know less than you. It doesn't matter. That's their position. You will learn the value of hard work. You will also get to understand how you can take advantage of opportunities. So you start in reserves, and then you can go active if you want. And if you find out you don't like it, you can stay in the reserves. But the biggest thing I would say is if you want to change your life, I'm not talking financially. If you want to change your life, join the military, because it'll open your mind and it'll expand your horizons and allow you to see that you can do anything you want if you truly want to. You know, that's what I would say. I would say if you're truly thinking about joining the service, then give it a shot and understand that it's hard work. Understand that it's hard work. But the benefits of it are tremendous, because they're going to use you, but you get to use them in return. They're going to give you the opportunity to go to school, and they'll pay for it. They're going to give you a chance to travel the world. They're going to give you a chance to go places and do things that you might never, ever get to do. And you'll get to meet people and make connections that 20 years from now, when you need a job or a reference, you can call on somebody and do it. Those are all of the positive things. The negative things are the negative things. You know, going to war is not fun. You might not come home. I get that. But the positives far outweigh the negatives when it comes to that. And you don't have to stay in it for 20 years. Go in there, do your 4 years, get your money saved up, go to college and keep it moving. But it's a way to get out of a bad situation and make your life better.
You mentioned earlier also that you said sports have changed your life. In what way and how?
Oh, man. Baseball in particular, it gives you, for me, it when all else fails, I can put a game on, man, and I can feel better because I can lose myself in the game. You know, it playing sports, watching sports is such a great thing, because it connects you to other people. For me, at least, it connects you to other people. You know, the sports argument is the greatest thing in the world. You know, it's the greatest thing in the world, the sports argument. You know, or watching a game and yelling at the game for 5 minutes or an hour or 2 hours, I'm not worried about my problems. I'm not worried about how I feel. I'm invested in something. You know, and that's what sports does for me, and I think that's what sports does for a lot of veterans is it takes us out of ourselves for a couple of hours, you know, and that's why I love it. That's why, you know, I call them, talk about the Knicks so much. I mean, I've been a Knicks fan forever, you know, and just imagining meeting those guys and playing those games is something that has always helped me with, because in some of my darkest days, you know, if a Knicks game or a Ranger game was on, you know, I put the game on and I suddenly forget why I was having such a bad day. You know, because now I'm mad that the Jets, you know, Richard Todd has thrown 4 interceptions to his next door neighbor, A.J. Dewey. You know, now I'm pissed about that instead of being pissed about my life. So that's what sports does for me. And I think that's what sports does for a lot of us, is it gives us an escape for a couple of hours so that we don't have to worry about what we're going through, you know. So that's what it is for me with sports. I mean, you know, if just even segueing into that, you know, just, you know, it's sports is great. You know, it's I mean, I look at what's going on with the Heisman Trophy thing, you know, and
hey, what's your thoughts on that?
That's a conversation. Listen, I personally don't think Baker Mayfield should get the Heisman Trophy. I find it really insulting that after everything he's done, and I'm talking about the off-the-field stuff, you know, if Lamar Jackson had been arrested, drunk, and fought cops, Lamar Jackson would not be going to New York right now. But somehow Baker Mayfield gets to go to New York. Okay? Reggie Bush got his Heisman taken away for something his family did. But Baker Mayfield, you got to understand, he's just so, you know, his guys want to run through a wall for him. I don't give a damn. Last I checked, there is a character clause. There is a character clause for the Heisman Trophy. So why is he, and he's going to win. Let's be clear. He's going to win. He's going to win. I don't think he should. I personally think Saquon Barkley should be in New York, because the reason Saquon Barkley's numbers fell off has nothing to do with Saquon Barkley. It's got to do with the fact that his offensive coordinator stopped giving him the ball. If you look at some of the last, I'd say, five games Saquon Barkley played in, look at the number of carries, and then look at the number of carries the previous, say, six games. Those carries went way, way down. Well, he can't run for 100 yards if he's only getting the ball 10 times a game. He can't help his team win if he doesn't get the ball. But I personally think Baker Mayfield is going to get the Heisman. I don't think he should. I think it's a travesty, personally, because, I mean, listen, just this past offseason, he's fighting with cops. Drunk, fighting with cops. Tiger don't change their stripes. Okay? So whatever team drafts him, understand that you're getting Johnny Manziel 2.0. That's what I think. I think you're getting Johnny Manziel 2.0. I think this kid is a knucklehead, and it's going to show up when he gets to the NFL. Because if he's acting like that in college, what do you think he's going to act like when he gets to the pros? That's just me. I don't know. That's just me.
I don't have any follow-up on your Heisman Trophy candidate points right there. But let me ask you something on the teams that you root for. Do you have a favorite player of all the teams that you root for? The Jets, the Yankees, Rangers, the Knicks. Like, you have a player all time, talking about a guy that you say, you know what, that's my favorite guy on this team all time. Do you have one of those?
Yeah, for the Knicks it'd be Louis Orr.
Okay.
Because, you know, Louis Orr was 6'9", like 100 pounds, and he would just go in there and rebound with people. And when I was a kid, I was short and I was skinny. So I looked at him and I'm like, man, look at this dude. He weighed like 100 pounds. He's there battling with the big boys. So Louis Orr is my all time favorite Knick. Most people don't even know who Louis Orr is. He played at Syracuse. He was the man. you know, that's my guy for the Knicks. For the Yankees, it's Willie Randolph. I always loved Willie. I mimicked when I played, you know, baseball as a kid. My batting style, I mimicked him. You know, Roy White would be number two, but Willie Randolph is my guy. You know, hockey, my favorite player, honestly, is Roman Indoor. I know he was horrible, but that's just who I liked. The Jets, Al Toon and Wesley Walker are tied for me. Both guys who you know, Al Toon had one eye. Not Al Toon. Wesley Walker had one eye. He was legally blind in one eye. Okay, he played the NFL. And then Al Toon was a guy that I thought, you know, because of his injuries, he never got to realize his potential. I went through Yankees, I did Rangers, I did Knicks, Jets. And yeah, and of course with soccer, it was believe it or not, it wasn't Pele, because I'm old enough to remember when the Cosmos played soccer in New York. My guy was Franz Beckenbauer. that was my guy. Don't ask me why. I just like his name, Franz Beckenbauer. I just love his name. But that was my guy, man. I mean, that's from, those are the people that whether they realize it or not, they helped shape, you know, my thought process when it came to things, man. It's like, I think of the Yankees now, and you know, full disclosure, I've never been a Brian Cashman fan. I don't like Brian Cashman. If they fired him tomorrow, I'd probably throw a party. My favorite Yankee GM was Bob Watson, who never got any credit for what he did for this franchise. But I don't agree with them firing Joe Girardi, but I understand it. I think it was time for Girardi to go, even though I don't like the fact that he's gone. I think he could have won a World Series with this team, but I also think after 10 years, you know, 10 years is a long time to work with somebody who's as intense as Girardi was. I'm not a fan of the hiring of Aaron Boone, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and see what happens. You know, I hope they bring back CeCe.
Is this somebody you'd rather have? Is somebody you'd rather have than Aaron Boone?
Hensley Mullins. I would have rather had Hensley Mullins. He speaks multiple languages, and I think that because he's been a coach, at least he understands the dynamic in the clubhouse. I liked him when he played for the – and he has a little bit of – I remember him as a player. So, I remember Aaron Boone too, but I was never a fan of Aaron Boone as a player. I liked Hensley Mullins. I thought he was a guy who maximized his ability, even though he wasn't that great a player. But I thought he got the most out of his ability, and those are the guys I root for, guys like that, because they're the guys who understand what it takes to be successful. You know, Aaron Boone was born into baseball with his brother, his father, his grandfather. He never really had to work for what he got. People can say all they want, oh, he's unassuming, this and that. Listen, his last name was Boone. There were going to be some doors open for him that weren't going to be open for other people, okay? Whereas Hensley Mullins has to actually work to get to the major leagues and work to stay there, you know? So that's who I would have preferred. So for me, that's where I am with that. I don't like what I'm hearing about the coaching staff. I think it looks like there's going to be a lot of young, novice guys on this coaching staff, and they're all into the analytics, and I'm old school. I don't believe in analytics, because the one thing I know with numbers as an engineer is I can make numbers say anything I want them to say. You know, there is a formula, and you can look it up. There's a formula that proves that 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2, okay? It'll take you 5 blackboards to write out the entire equation, but you can mathematically prove that 1 + 1 does not equal 2. So don't tell me what your numbers say, because you can make numbers do anything you want if you're smart enough to manipulate. So I'm not a fan of analytics, because the numbers are only as good as the information you're putting in. That's just, again, I'm old, and I'm that old guy saying get off my lawn. I get that. But I don't believe in relying on analytics as much as people are, because I know what you can do with numbers. And I know how you can manipulate them to say anything you want them to say. That's why when you take a multiple choice test, the 4 selections they give you are called distractors, because they're there to distract you from the real answer. But, you know, that's what it is with baseball now. That's the direction baseball is going. So, you know, my hope right now is Cashman does something tremendous and finds a way to get rid of Ellsbury and Gardner and Headley and bring in Giancarlo Stanton. That would be a good move to me. Honestly, I think it would, because you keep Hicks, you got Clint Frazier, you put Judge, Hicks, and Stanton in that outfield, or Frazier, Hicks, Stanton, or Judge in that outfield. You can flip flop Stanton and Judge in your DH spot. That's a hell of a lineup. You know, that's a hell of a lineup, but that's just me. You know, it's going to be hard to move those contracts is the thing when it comes to talking about getting rid of Ellsbury, getting rid of Headley. I think a lot of people will take Gardner, but it's going to be difficult to move Ellsbury unless you're willing to eat some money. And since Hal Steinbrenner is insistent upon getting under this luxury tax threshold, that probably won't happen. But you know, I'm holding out hope that it does, you know, and you know, I go from there to my Knicks. you know, the biggest thing I'm seeing with them is we're seeing effort, but, you know, there's this narrative going with the Knicks that, oh, they're better because they got rid of Carmelo Anthony. No, they're better because they have a guy named Enes Kanter who can rebound and score. They're better because they have a guy in Tim Hardaway Jr. who can hit an outside shot. They're better because they have a kid in Frank Ntilikina who can play defense. They're better because Courtney Lee now can play defense. They're better because they have a point guard in Jarrett Jack who sets up the offense. So this team that the Knicks have right now is apples to oranges to the team last year, because last year all you had was Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis. So how can you then say, oh, it's because we got rid of Melo? It is, but it isn't. If you give Carmelo Anthony and Enes Kanter and a Tim Hardaway Jr. and a Jarrett Jack, you're going to tell me that Knicks team wouldn't have been better last season? You can't tell me that team wouldn't have been better. So it's I've never been one to blame one guy for the failures of a team. You know, one guy does not let me rephrase this. Most of the time, one guy is not the cause of a team's failures. It's a collective effort. For whatever reason, Carmelo Anthony takes a lot of grief from NBA fans based on, you know, that four-letter network that has, for whatever reason, had an agenda against him. But I like what the Knicks are doing this season. I think that the sky's the limit in the sense of they're finally moving in the right direction. I like what Scott Perry is doing as far as trying to build the foundation. But to say that the only reason they're better is you have to say it because without trading Carmelo, you don't get these people. But it's not fair, I guess is the best way I can put it. It's not fair because you can't say if Carmelo was here that this team was doing well if you then would have still acquired these pieces. And I forgot Doug was done. You acquire these same pieces, you keep Carmelo Anthony, I think this Knicks team is probably number four in the East. But that's just me. I'm funny that way. I tend to try to give context to things. You know, I'm big on context when it comes to sports, and that's one of the things I think has been lost. There's no context anymore. You know, everyone say, oh, Steph Curry's the greatest shooter ever. Steph Curry's not the greatest shooter ever, okay? He's a great shooter in this generation of basketball the way it's played. But you put Steph Curry in the 80s, when a guy like Derek Harper could put his hand on his hip and move him like a chess piece, Steph Curry is not the same player. You put Steph Curry on a team in the 60s when you had Butch Van Bredekoff, who, as the coach of the Lakers, literally took the ball out of Wilt Chamberlain's hands. At that time, Wilt Chamberlain was the most dominant player in the league, and all this stuff can be looked up, by the way. And Butch Van Bredekoff literally told the other players, you will not pass it to Chamberlain, okay, and cost his team a championship by doing that, by the way. So you put Steph Curry in an era where the coach was the biggest star, where the coach would say, oh, you just shot that ball from 28 feet, get on the bench. Steph Curry's not the greatest shooter ever. So I believe there has to be context with these proclamations of players being called the greatest ever, because without context, what you're saying doesn't make sense. You know, if Jerry West, Oscar Robertson, or Pistol Pete Maravich, or Elgin Baylor were playing in this era of basketball, do you know how many points they might score? Are you kidding me right now? There's no defense being played. Everybody's just jacking up shots. Imagine Jerry West playing right now. Come on. I'm not trying to hear it. But, you know, I don't have a problem with saying someone's the best of their generation. But the best ever thing, I think, is ridiculous, because you have to give context. There are only a few players that would do well in any generation. You know, Wilt Chamberlain would do well in any generation. Bill Russell would do well in any generation. Larry Bird would do well in any generation. Jordan probably would do well in most of the generations. I wasn't a Jordan fan. I'm a Knicks fan. I think LeBron James would do well in any generation. But some of these guys, the Kyrie Irvings, the Steph Currys, the Kevin Durants, no. I don't see them doing the things they do in some of those other generations because you were allowed to be, listen, Jerry Lucas would put his forearm in Kevin Durant's chest and Kevin Durant would be done, okay? Jerry Sloan, you know, who played in the NBA, which a lot of these younger fans don't know, is one of the toughest players to ever play basketball, all right? Jerry Sloan would have kneecapped a couple of these dudes and they'd be done. But, you know, hey, I've only been watching basketball for like 40 years. What do I know? So, it's you know, the NBA has changed a lot. It's become very European in the sense of it's about big men shooting from the outside. It's not the same game I grew up watching. I'm not saying it's better. I'm not saying it's worse. It's different. But let's just have some context when we start proclaiming somebody the greatest ever. That's all I'm saying. Just give it some context. That's all.
What about your Jets, man? I'm damn near waiting to hear what you got to say about the Jets historically, currently, the eras, because we don't do a lot of Jets talking. I've wanted to get it from you. So, man, well, how's everything with Gang Green and everything, man?
It's a typical Jet season when they should be losing, they're winning. I don't like Todd Bowles as a coach. I think he's a poor game manager. I don't think he handles veterans very well, as you see the situation going on. Muhammad Wilkerson's not going to be a Jet after this season, and I think that's a direct result of Todd Bowles not being able to deal with a veteran player. And Muhammad Wilkerson should retire a Jet. He won't. They're going to re-sign Josh McCown, which is a mistake. Josh McCown is a journeyman quarterback. Yeah, let's go ahead and re-sign Josh McCown because he might win, what, 6-7 games. How does that advance the franchise? How does that put you on the road to just to making the playoffs? The hell with the Super Bowl. Just making the playoffs. It's not. But Jet fans are so starved for any success, they're willing to swallow a Josh McCown at 38 years old. So we need to bring him back. Why the hell would you bring him back? Josh McCown shouldn't be starting right now. Okay? We need an actual quarterback. Oh, and by the way, I like Mason Rudolph. I like the kid from Oklahoma State. I don't want Sam Darnold. I'm not really feeling Josh Rosen. The kid Allen from Wyoming, I'm not really feeling. You give me the kid from Oklahoma State, I take him in a heartbeat. But you're not going to get a good quarterback if you're the Jets right now because you're doing just enough to be average. The Jets will probably go, what, 6-10? Maybe 7-9. If they go 7-9, this is a successful season, but it can't be a successful season because you're trying to rebuild and you still have no quarterback. Because it's obvious Todd Bowles is coaching for his job. He's not going to play Bryce Petty. He's not going to play Christian Hackenberg, who never should have been drafted. So how does that advance the franchise? How does that build the foundation of anything? You're going to get rid of Muhammad Wilkerson. Your best wide receiver is Robbie Anderson. I like Robbie Anderson, but come on, man. Come on. This is typical Jets nonsense, where the ownership, as usual, is taking the temperature of the fans and making their moves accordingly, which is the wrong thing to do. If you're going to build a foundation, then build a damn foundation. Okay, tear it down, build the foundation, and let's go. Stop with the Band-Aids. Josh McCown should not have been signed. This season should have been one of pain for the Jets. It should have been a Bryce Petty, Christian Hackenberg disaster show so that the Jets could get a high draft pick, trade that draft pick to slide back in the first round, accumulate more draft picks, and build up their areas of need. Instead, they're going to go, 6-10, 7-9. They're going to re-sign Josh McCown, and next season is going to be a flaming dumpster fire like last season was with Ryan Fitzpatrick. But this is what the Jets do. You know, when they're supposed to lose, they win. When they're supposed to win, they lose. You know, it's It sucks being a Jet fan, man. It really does, because it never works out. Never works out. I mean, I can go back to, you know, with the game in Denver, the first half in Denver, everything was great. And also the second half, the wind kicked up and we couldn't complete passes. You know, I go all the way back to Richard Todd and A.J. Dewey. And you know, Richard Todd threw four interceptions to his next-door neighbor. A.J. Dewey was his next-door neighbor. He threw four interceptions to him. You're going to tell me the fix was in? It is. the Jets' ownership is making a mistake by allowing Todd Bowles to continue to start Josh McCown. It's a mistake. It really is. I know people say, oh, but those wide receivers wouldn't be excelling. Listen, I don't really give a damn about whether Robbie Anderson and Jerome Kearse, whether they blossom as receivers when I don't have a quarterback of the future. You can find a wide receiver in the draft. You can find a couple. You can find a running back in the draft. You can find a couple. You can't find a quarterback unless you lose. They're not losing enough. All the good quarterbacks will be gone, and then they're going to wind up with somebody who they say, oh, he's the prototypical, which means he's going to be a bum. Because this is the same organization that had a chance to draft Dan Marino and drafted Ken O'Brien. Okay? The same organization that passed up on Junior Seau. So it is what it is. But this season, to me, is not a success. It's a failure. Because this was the year, if you were going to tear it down, this was the one to do it. And instead, they allowed Todd Bowles to secure his job security at the expense of the future of this franchise.
What about other sports or other franchises, if you want to go that route? College basketball, anything you like, dislike, what's going on right now in that? College football, you mentioned on the Heisman. What about individual sports, tennis, boxing, any other sports that you like, that non-team sports that you're feeling, or any direction you want to go with that?
Well, I'm a big St. John's guy, and I'm going to tell everybody this right now. The kid Shamari Ponds, keep your eye on him. He is going to be a better, more skilled offensively and just as good defensively version of Avery Bradley. The kid Shamari Ponds, just like Mo Harkless came out of St. John's and nobody really knew, but Mo Harkless turned into a really good player. Shamari Ponds is going to be a really good player in the NBA. He really is. I know everybody's going to talk about the Bagleys and all of that. You know, listen, I'm a New York guy. I look at the New York schools. I'm a St. John's guy. But the kid Shamari Ponds, in my opinion, is going to turn out to be a steal for somebody in the second round when he comes out. And you heard it here first. But college football as a whole, I'd like to know why University of Central Florida didn't get more love. You know, I know everybody wants the big schools, but again, I'm an underdog guy. I personally think they should have been in the playoff over Alabama because they were undefeated. To me, being undefeated means something. I don't care who you play, you still got to go out there and play. And they won every game they played. Plus, they're a fun school to watch. You know, I still watch Tiger, and right now I'm just hoping that he can be healthy. You know, I don't care if he never wins another major. I just want him to be healthy. You know, and again, with Serena and Venus, it's the same thing. I've always been more of a fan of Venus than Serena because it was obvious Serena was the more physically gifted. So I'm going to root for Venus because, you know, I'm a root for the Lou guy. But I'm a big Venus fan. I'd like to see her win at least two more majors before she ends her career. Soccer-wise, I follow the U.S. men's team. But, I really haven't followed soccer since, you know, the late 70s, early 80s when the Cosmos were around. I follow the scores, but I got away from it as I got into the other sports. And I wish boxing was better. You know, I miss boxing. You know, I really do. I miss boxing.
Who's your favorite? You have a favorite boxer or you have somebody you like?
Mark Breland. Mark Breland, because I knew him. You know, he lived in my building. You know, he lived in my building. I got to see him every day. That was, and he was a really nice dude. You know, I met Tyson, all those guys. But, I mean, if I had to pick one fighter, like, if I could say, yo, this dude that I would follow, it'd be Mark Breland, even though he never really won the big fight that he was supposed to win because at the end of the day, he just really wasn't that good. I mean, listen, he was good now. Don't get it twisted, but, you know, Mark Breland is not going to go down as in the Hall of Fame of boxing, but mm-hmm. he was a guy that I followed, and you know, I remember Sugar Ray and Hearns and Hagler and Alexis Arguello and Pryor, you know, back when boxing was
golden,
you know, and now okay. boxing is this this crazy sport with 13,000 alphabets and nobody's any good, and let me just say that John Jones is a freaking idiot, okay? John Jones, listen, how do you waste talent like that, man?
Yeah.
How do you do that? You know, and it's not like if he was strung out on drugs, I could understand that. You know what I'm saying? It's an addiction. I get it. Dude, you keep using steroids when you don't have to. You're so much better than everybody else, and you keep using steroids that you don't have to use, and the steroids he's using aren't really doing anything for him. It's not like they're making him bigger, stronger, or anything else. They're not really giving him any help because he's that much better than everybody else. This dude, listen, I would love to get in a room with him and just try to figure out what the hell is wrong with him because that makes no sense, man.
Man, we got a couple more minutes left, man. It's been an honor having you on. But quickly, please, because we got like two more minutes. Let me tell everybody the information for your Gear Drift podcast of where to go to log in to listen and subscribe to your audio and anything else, your final shout outs and your social media contacts. Again, please lay that out.
All right, well, the podcast is called Gear Adrift. It's on the Out of Pocket Sports Network. That's on Spreaker, Spreaker, Spreaker. It's called Gear Adrift. I'll be putting another episode out tomorrow, as a matter of fact, but you can listen to the first two episodes there. And you can get at me on Twitter, KnightChandler7 on Twitter. I mean, I'm on Facebook as Chandler Knight, but I don't really do a lot on Facebook. But Twitter is where I do most of my thing. And you know, like I say, I'm always open to any information, suggestions, criticisms, whatever. I'm not too full of myself to learn something or to find out that I'm wrong. And listen, man, thanks a lot for having me on. I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity to just kind of talk. You know, I really appreciate it.
Oh, no doubt. No, thank you too, man, for your sports IQ, your expertise. Sounding off with all of us on our various episodes, whether it's the Yankees, the Knicks, the Rangers too, and just like picking your sports knowledge because you've been a sports fan for the better part of four decades. So you have a lot of knowledge. You have a lot of perspective going across different generations that where our audience or our stakeholders or e-stakeholders maybe a little bit more a little younger, but nothing, and I've said this many a times, there's nothing like the old school fan at all, man. There's nothing like that type of fan. You come on and they have a different perspective because you've seen more than the fan who's, you know, just younger. But thank you for all that, what you do. I've learned a few things from your platform of the Gear Drift and the veterans, and it's a good way to make an outlet. It's a voice. You're a voice of trying to reach and help people, and I can't have nothing but respect. I mean, that's a tremendous thing you're doing, man.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Right. Stakeholder Spotlight at KnightChandler7, not at KnightChandler7 on Twitter. This episode will be on iTunes, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, and your Stitcher apps as well. As the website, bleedblueshow.com, just to get to listen to Chandler, take Chandler on the go and listen to him rejoice or rave whenever our teams do good or do well, or, and if they do bad, you're definitely going to hear from him, man. It's an honor to have him on. Night Chandler 7, we'll see you on the social media, and make sure we have certain fans not talk reckless, man. I know you'd be checking those fans, man. It'd be crazy, man.
Yeah, all right, man.
No doubt. Night Chandler 7. Sangre Azul, Bleed Blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep bloop, 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 bleep bloop.
Do you suffer from chronic CFED or can't focus energy drain? Try over-the-counter Vibrin. One tablet contains the same caffeine as a cup of coffee, but without the calories or coffee breath. Vibrin. Caffeine, not coffee. Taking Vibrin may result in increased productivity and decreased dread in setting alarms. Unexpected enjoyment of the graveyard shift has been associated with Vibrin. Vibrin may be a better budget option than drinking coffee. It may also decrease the urge to doze off, skip work, or exhibit signs of slacking. All jokes aside, always read the label, take only as directed, and limit caffeine as it may cause real side effects. Not for children under age 12. Do you suffer from chronic CFED or can't focus energy drain? Try over-the-counter Vibrin. One tablet contains the same caffeine as a cup of coffee, but without the calories or coffee breath. Vibrin. Caffeine. Not coffee. Taking Vibrin may result in increased productivity and decreased dread in setting alarms. Unexpected enjoyment of the graveyard shift has been associated with Vibrin. Vibrin may be a better budget option than drinking coffee. It may also decrease the urge to doze off, skip work, or exhibit signs of slacking. All jokes aside, always read the label, take only as directed, and limit caffeine as it may cause real side effects. Not for children under age 12.
When you come to Carrabba's Italian Grill on a Monday, you're going to say,
wow, a three-course meal for only $12.99?
On Amore Monday, get Carrabba's delicious made-from-scratch entrees, including super salad and your choice of an appetizer or dessert.
That's a huge meal for only $12.99. Wow.
Choose Carrabba's homemade lasagna, prosciutto-wrapped pork tenderloin, or linguine positano with chicken, plus two other courses.
Wow, now I love Mondays.
Come to Carrabba's this Amore Monday for a delicious three-course meal starting at only $12.99.
Carrabba's. Wow.
When you come to Carrabba's Italian Grill on a Monday, you're going to say,
wow, a three-course meal for only $12.99?
On Amore Monday, get Carrabba's delicious made-from-scratch entrees, including super salad and your choice of an appetizer or dessert.
That's a huge meal for only $12.99. Wow.
Choose Carrabba's homemade lasagna, prosciutto-wrapped pork tenderloin, or linguine positano with chicken, plus two other courses.
Wow, now I love Mondays.
Come to Carrabba's this Amore Monday for a delicious three-course meal starting at only $12.99.
Carrabba's. Wow.